From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's a special best of edition of our theater podcast, Curtain Call. Host Tom Candela is revisiting some of the most inspiring voices and unforgettable moments from the past year, from bold innovators and cultural advocates.
The work that I do is completely rooted in the archetypal clown.
To devoted champions of local storytelling.
It's so different every week. Sometimes you're going to have the best experience you've ever had in your life. And sometimes you're just going to say, oh, geez, I didn't really get that.
Take your seat for something special. It's the best of Curtain Call. Coming up right after this hour's news from NPR.
Live from NPR News, I'm Corva Coleman. President Trump says he is sending his border czar to Minneapolis tonight. He says Tom Homan will report to him. The Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association is calling for a meeting with Trump. They say Minnesota communities are under heightened stress with Trump's immigration crackdown. A federal judge holds a hearing today to determine whether federal agents' tactics can be limited. This comes after agents killed protester Alex Preddy on Saturday. NPR's Jasmine Garz reports from Minneapolis.
Over the weekend, the Trump administration tried to paint Preddy, who is a U.S. citizen, as a domestic terrorist. Border Patrol Chief Greg Bovino said Preddy had a gun and was intent on massacring law enforcement. But multiple videos show Preddy holding a phone in his hand. At least six masked federal officers tackle him, beat him, and pin him face down on the ground. Then one agent appears to pull a gun from Preddy's waistband before agents shoot him multiple times. City officials say Preddy had a lawful permit to carry. The Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension says DHS has blocked its investigators. A federal judge has ruled that Homeland Security cannot destroy or alter evidence related to Preddy's death. Jasmine Garst, NPR News, Minneapolis.
The huge winter storm that hit the country over the past few days is still hammering New England. The South got ice that cut electricity to more than 800,000 customers. Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves is urging people to use caution.
It's more likely that things are going to get worse before they get better. And we want to make sure that everyone, first and foremost, across the state, takes care and reaches out to their friends and their family and their neighbors.
Most of the big outages are in southern states. Stocks opened higher this morning as investors await the outcome of a midweek policy meeting by the Federal Reserve. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
The central bank's expected to hold interest rates steady this week, but investors will be listening for hints about possible future rate cuts. The Fed's trying to strike a balance between lower rates to boost the sluggish job market and higher rates to battle stubborn inflation. Orders for long-lasting manufactured goods got a boost in November, thanks to a big jump in orders for civilian aircraft. A delayed report from the Commerce Department shows durable goods orders rose more than 5% during the month. Orders for non-transportation goods rose by 0.5%. The massive winter storm that blanketed the country this weekend forced the cancellation of more than 29% of all flights on Sunday. It was the biggest disruption to air travel since the pandemic. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The Israeli military says it has identified and returned the body of the last deceased Israeli hostage. Ron Gavili was a special forces policeman. He was killed while fighting Hamas militants on October 7, 2023. This is NPR. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says a security agreement with the U.S. is 100% ready to be signed. This comes after talks over the weekend among Ukrainian, U.S., and Russian officials about the war in Ukraine. The European Union's executive arm will open proceedings against Elon Musk's AI chatbot today. NPR's Rob Schmitz reports. That's according to German media.
The German newspaper Handelsblatt reports that Musk's AI chatbot Grok will be investigated for violating the EU's Digital Services Act, which aims to create a safe online environment by holding digital platforms accountable for their content. The proceedings aim to force Musk to withdraw his company's chatbot from the European market. A study by the Center for Countering Digital Hate analyzed a sample of posts on Grok's X handle. It found that Grok created an estimated 3 million sexualized images over a span of 11 days from the end of December into January. including 23,000 sexualized images of children. Rob Schmitz, NPR News, Berlin.
A towering leader in the global fight against smallpox has died. Dr. William Fagy died Saturday at his Atlanta home, according to the health organization he founded. He was 89. Fagy and colleagues developed a ring method to contain smallpox in the 1960s by identifying every case and then vaccinating everyone the patient came into contact with. This helped eradicate smallpox from the world. Fagy also formerly led the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting books, radio, podcasts, film, television, theater, and more to bridge science and the humanities, and the listeners who support this NPR station.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, nacl.org. And from listeners like you.
This is Radio Catskill. The winter storm has moved on, and our region is dealing with its impacts today. Ulster County has a travel ban in place until noon. Other municipalities are asking residents to stay off the roads, including the towns of Delaware and Thompson. There are many, many closures today. Sullivan County government offices open at 11. Exercise caution and check ahead. Call 511 for the latest emergency info and road conditions in your state. This is Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Today, we're celebrating the voices that bring our stages to life on a special Best of Curtain Call, our theater podcast. Each week, host Tom Candela brings you engaging, in-depth interviews with the artists, directors, and creators shaping our local community theaters, alongside special guests from New York City and beyond. From hometown stages to Broadway lights, Tom uncovers the stories, struggles, and triumphs behind the curtain. And today, Tom shares some of his favorite moments of the year from Curtain Call.
Well, hello and welcome once again to a special episode of Curtain Call. I'm Tom Candela, your host for this show and every episode of Curtain Call. You know, over the past year, I've had the privilege of sitting down with many of the artists who just don't perform on stage. They help shape the creative heartbeat of theater in our region. They are storytellers. They are risk takers. They are the builders of community and champions of what live theater can be when it is rooted in passion and purpose and connection. So as a special post-holiday treat, I'm going to bring you something that hasn't been done before. Well, I haven't done it before anyway on this show. I'm giving a full 48 minutes of the Best of Curtain Call. And you're going to listen to four remarkable conversations that I've had over the last year, four unforgettable voices, and four very different windows into the creative spirit that keeps our theater scene thriving here. And I have to say that, you know, I had to struggle a little bit in choosing these four because, as far as I'm concerned, every conversation I've had is the best, you know. But I had to do it. I had to find four. And I think, you know, in choosing, I wanted to sort of have a wide range of different points of view or different creative people that reside here and build our community, our theater community. So you're going to hear from some fearless solo performer who reimagines Shakespeare through physical theater and clowning, from a visionary arts leader who has built a true sanctuary for artists to experiment and grow, and from a theater company transforming farmland into stages for storytelling and social change. And of course, from a very beloved local arts advocate whose work preserves these stories and the spirit of our community. So these are the voices that I chose that I think are worth revisiting during this holiday season. So settle in, because this is your Best of Curtain Call Holiday Special. First up, I'm opening the show with an artist who reminds me that theater can be bold and physical and joyfully unpredictable. Ellie J, better known in our area and to most of you as Clown Daddy, is a performer who blurs the line between comedy and catharsis. Now, many of you might have seen her most recent performance in our area. Was back in, I want to say the summer, just, or maybe it was the spring, when she performed down at the Parlor in Harrisburg, a one-woman show, Hamlet, All by Myself. That was the name of the show. And it was absolutely wonderful. I went to go see it with my wife, Teresa, and we had such a great time. And after the show, I went up to her and I introduced myself and I said, Ellie J, you must be on Curtain Call. And she immediately agreed. And she came in and we talked. So this is an artist who, using movement and puppetry and fearless vulnerability to reimagine, you know, what a solo performance can be. Now, her work invites the audience to laugh and to reflect and sometimes to feel a little bit uncomfortable, but in the best possible way. Her one-woman reimagining of Hamlet, as I was just talking about, she brought Shakespeare into a raw, playful, and deeply human space, proving that classic stories can still surprise us and challenge us and even speak directly to who we are today. She was the perfect way to begin our show today. And we had a great conversation, and I want to share it once again with you folks. Here we go. We're going to meet a performer who dares to blur the line between comedy and catharsis. Ellie J, also known by her stage name as Clown Daddy, her work is bold, physical, and delightfully unpredictable. She invites audiences to laugh, to reflect, and sometimes even feel a little bit uncomfortable in the best possible way, though. So I want to introduce Ellie J. Welcome to Curtain Call.
Thank you so much, Tom. That was a beautiful introduction.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Okay. For our audience members who don't know Clown Daddy, who is she? Where did she come from?
Well, first and foremost, I've always been an actress. That is how I started out. When it comes to the theater, it's just always been in my bones. So I went to NYU. I went and studied at Tisch School of the Arts,
yes.
Atlantic Theater Company. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate what I got from Atlantic Theater Company specifically, because they are a very successful theater company outside of NYU. So while I was studying there, I got the most incredible taste of what a working, thriving theater company feels like. So that's where I got that really important sense of technique, because when it comes to artistry, you got to have your foundation. So I'm there and I'm doing my thing, and the professors are starting to notice my tendencies towards
to go
towards
off book.
my going rogue. They and I noticed how I wanted the physicality of the character. So they're like, okay, our method doesn't necessarily really include the physicality of the character. Have you heard of the Lecoq School in Paris? Mm-hmm. And so I moved there and immediately went into Lecoq, and it was, I describe it as the Hogwarts for the actor. Because their focus is the dynamics of movement. And so we would study everything, because everything does move. We would study colors. We would study the elements. How do you stand on a stage in a quote-unquote neutral way and give and produce that story in your body, where you are, what you're doing, what time it is, what are the elements surrounding you? For clown school, quote-unquote clown school, it was terrifying and very hard.
But the dynamics of movement, all of that stuff that I learned in the first year, it fed into who became Clown Daddy.
Okay.
The work that I do is completely rooted in the archetypal clown. Because even back in when I was studying at NYU, one of the elective courses that I took that absolutely changed my life entirely was Per Brahe's mask class. And Per Brahe had these masks that were all created surrounding the archetypes. And I found that very beautiful. The clown is always next to the traditionally, historically, the jester is the one next to the king. Yeah. Whispering in his ear, like, remember, you're also going to die, you know, the jester, the fool. And so that is the work that I do, is the archetypal laughter maker, because the clown in itself, in its most raw form, the archetypal clown is the laughter maker, the one that brings neutrality amongst all people, places, races, cultures, creeds, everything, and brings them back to the same spot of, I can make you all laugh.
Okay. Eventually, you decided to perform solo.
Mm-hmm.
So how did that come about?
I, through trial and error, was like, I don't really want to, respect to everyone involved, I don't really want to be working with people. It's because you want to, at the end of the day, one would hope that everyone's highest intention is to put on a great show. But egos can get involved. And so I was like, with all due respect, I'm going to back away from working with people and see what I can do by myself. And then I moved out towards Calicoon area. I met Tanis, the incredible woman who is in charge of the whole Farm Arts Collective. And so it was just through magnificent happenstances that I started involving myself in other theaters and other companies and things like that. I got to the point where people were like, oh, I've heard of you. Do you want to do this thing? And I'm like, great.
Sure.
So that's how it happened. So I've got object manipulation. There's a little bit of magic in there. So all of these components that I'm kind of like literally juggling, I'm like, okay, well, what fits where? And so that's how I would say Hamlet came to be, because I was able to take all of these skills and go, great, now I can take one of the most famous pieces of all time and take it and really chomp on it with my acting chops and also add the frivolity and chaos that clowning and puppetry can often bring with them.
So you are playing every single one of the characters that is in the famous play Hamlet. Tell us about what inspired you to take on the bard to begin with.
I'm such a nerd for theater, Tom. I've always loved Shakespeare. My Hamlet, all by myself, came to being because the illustrious Kathy Geary, one of my dearest friends and biggest fans.
Yep. Host of one of our shows.
A host of one of your shows. Yep. With gorgeous voice. She was in charge of the Arts Nest at Delaware Valley Opera. And she was in charge of filling
talent.
Talent.
Yeah.
So I had performed at Arts Nest before, and she asked me to do it again. And I was like, okay, well, I've already done the vaudevillian stuff. But I was like, what do I really want to do now? And I was like, God, I would love to do some Shakespeare. Mm. And then I was like, well, why not? You're all by yourself. So I was like, okay, great, I'll do Shakespeare. And then I was like, okay, well, what do I do? And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to do Hamlet.
If we wanted to catch some of your shows or find out what's happening in your life, in your career, how do we find that out?
Yeah, if people go to clowndaddypresents.com, you'll find everything that I am up to, that I have done, that I will do, and it also has links to calendar and my Instagram.
Great. clowndaddypresents.com. Very good. I want to thank you for being part of Curtain Call. And that was Ellie J, better known as Clown Daddy to folks here in our theater community. And listening to that conversation, you really start to hear, you know, what happens when training and a great imagination and fearlessness on stage collide and bring us these great works of art. And her work shows us that theater doesn't always have to play it safe. Sometimes you have to be real brave and get out there and create new ways of looking at a piece, like a show like Hamlet. Now, speaking of artists who are creating brave new spaces for exploration and discovery, my next piece that I pulled out from the archives, it is a place that
has become a true creative sanctuary in our region for theater and creativity.
I'm honored to have Brad Krumholz, the visionary co-founder and executive artistic director of the North American Cultural Laboratory, also known as NACL. NACL is more than just a performance venue. It's a haven for artistic exploration, innovation, and community engagement. Brad, I want to welcome you to Curtain Call.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
I mean, you have a lot of different programs going on, and you are a haven of growth, I think, for our community.
Yeah, it's true. We're a small staff, but small but mighty. It's me, it's Brett Kaiser, it's Lindsay Anderson, who's our Director of Artist Experience. We have a technical associate that works with us named Brendan Regenball. We have a bookkeeper named Jerry Finn, and we have a chef. And the chef is, at this moment, is a contracted employee named Bonnie Matthews. And we're just doing everything we can to support the arts ecosystem. I started focusing more and more to open up our space as a place where people could come and develop their own work. And so now what our primary activity is, and has been for a few years now, is this program, which we call the Deep Space Performance Residency Program.
Yeah.
We have a company of theater creators come up and live in the house for a week. And we take care of everything for them. And we give them 24/7 access to our theater space and all the technical equipment in it. That week is a rare opportunity for the artists to do nothing but focus mm-hmm. on being artists. And so what we provide is just a week of... We refer to ourselves as a haven. Mm-hmm. It's a sanctified week in which they just get to be the artists that they want to be full time. And they don't even have to think about where they're getting their food from.
And so it has the L part of it has laboratory in it. And so that connotates experimentation. And how does that fit into what happens there?
It started with this kind of theater work that we were interested in. So every morning, for years and years, we would, with whatever actors we were gathered with, we would go into the studio and we would have hours of vocal and creative training that are really quite rigorous and exhausting. Mm-hmm. All of those things are part and parcel of the actor's organism. And what the training does is it allows the actor to develop skills that are more like training the actor's organism to be more receptive to the possibility of expressive behavior. So they become more and more able to absorb the needs of that role and turn them into some kind of expressive performance behavior. Then the other part of the laboratory was the fact that we would create our performances really from scratch. And so we're not just developing the individual actors' abilities, but we're developing the abilities of people who are creating things together to be able to create things together more fluidly. At the end of each week, we open the doors to a public sharing. And we want to share with them what's going on here because it's important to us to connect with our community in that way. And we really try and communicate to our audience that's what we are doing. We're not consuming a product. We are sharing a process. And so the audience gets to see what that looks like. And I think that what we're doing at NACL is creating a community that really is, over time, has come to understand and appreciate the creative labors of the theater artist.
My next question was going to be, how is the audience response to that? Because they come with their own expectations, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of audiences come with... expecting to be entertained, expecting a certain performance, you will.
Yeah.
You're really almost removing the word performance from the performances from your
theater. We don't call them performances. We call them sharing.
So it's a very interesting concept. How does the audience react to that?
It's so different every week. Sometimes you're going to have the best experience you've ever had in your life. and sometimes you're just going to say, oh, geez, I didn't really get that. And before every show, I make an announcement. And I talk to everybody who's there in case they don't know what it is they're getting into. I really explain, okay, this is what we're doing here.
Okay.
And we may stop every 15 minutes and ask questions or ask you to write some things down. And then we'll continue in a different part of the theater watching a different scene. And there are lots of ways that these things happen. And we always have soup at the end. It's always free. And it's a way for the artist and the audience to get to know each other, to hear about the work, but also just to get to know each other socially.
I want to go now to your periodic table.
Back in the late 90s, we had a newsletter. And we called it the periodic table because NaCl, in addition to being North American Cultural Laboratory, is also sodium chloride. And so the periodic table occurred to us as a great title for our newsletter because it came out periodically. Artists would contribute to it and write little articles about their ideas about theater and craft and all of that. And so right now our online journal is a periodic table, and it is also our membership platform. So it's like a way for people to give a little bit each month to us to help keep us alive. And I'm hoping that this conversation will enable us to set up a series of conversations that are wider and wider.
If anyone's listening, who do they reach out to and
just
how?
Contact me, brad@nacl.org. The website is nacl.org, and the donation button is really easy to find. May I add one thing?
Yes, please.
Yeah, we are at WJFF right now. I have a long relationship with WJFF. When I moved up here in 1999, Jason Dole's telepathic radio was the first thing that I heard that made me realize that this was where I needed to be. WJFF is a huge part of NACL. We really feel like our time up here for over 25 years would not have been possible without WJFF. For the entire time I've been up here, I felt so fortunate to have the airwaves populated by this force that gives everyone something that they know that they feel connected by. So I just wanted to say that. I really feel very strongly about that.
We've been speaking with Brad Krumholtz, one of the visionaries and co-founders of NACL. I want to thank you very much for being on Curtain Call today. It's been a true pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure.
And that was the conversation from back in June with Brad Krumholtz of NACL. Now, during that conversation, you may recall that Brad spoke about people who helped shape that philosophy. One of those people was Tanis Kowalczyk. She was also, back in the day, one of the founders of NACL. Now, that creative journey is a great segue into the next segment, because Farm Arts Collective is an organization that doesn't just create performances, they cultivate theater. Their work connects storytelling with farming, food justice, environmental responsibility, and community resilience, using theater as a tool to spark dialogue and educate and create real world change. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome two remarkable artists from the innovative Farm Arts Collective. First, there is Tanis Kowalczyk, the artistic director and a true pioneer in devised theater and creative placemaking. Tanis is also an organic farmer, co-owning Willow Wisp Organic Farm right in our area in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Joining her also in the studio today is Jess Beveridge, the dynamic company manager of Farm Arts Collective. Jess also manages greenhouses and flowers at the Willow Wisp Organic Farm, and she brings her rich theatrical experiences from AMDA and numerous New York companies to her work, both on the stage and in the fields. Give us a little idea, Tanis, how you developed this production company and how you integrate the agricultural aspects of the Willow Wisp Farm into your productions.
Sure. I think Farm Arts Collective came about because of Willow Wisp Organic Farm. You know, I was running a production company, an ensemble, a group called North American Cultural Laboratory, or NACL. We had started in New York City and moved up to Sullivan County in 2000 and started running experimental theater festivals. It was really exciting. And I realized that I loved working with artists and scientists and visual artists, a lot of different kinds of people in my community to create a project. And that sort of planted the seed. I just was like, I think it's time to bring this kind of this interest in community engagement to the farm, to talk about the issues of climate change and sustainability and social and eco-justice. And it was just like this melding of all the different things that I was doing into one place and time, and bringing the community engagement practice in the theater performances I was making with community to the farm. It just all kind of made sense to me. And so I named it Farm Arts Collective. It was just like kind of an efficiency move as well as a move of mission.
Why don't you just talk a little bit about the mission of the Farm Arts Collective?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Farm Arts Collective, we're based on four main pillars of life-sustaining practices in farming, art, food, and ecology. So we are not just a theater company or workshop producers or farmers, But we try to bring in all of those four pillars into everything that we're doing. We have workshops on farming, sustainability, fermenting, flowers. We also have performances surrounding social justice. We have an annual Juneteenth event. We have a science cabaret that's been really successful. We have a solo festival that we invite solo artists to come and share their work on in our theater. And then we also serve farm fresh food at almost every single one of our events. So we try to tie in all of those things into everything that we're doing.
I wanted to find opportunities for our community and the public to literally come in and experience what we're doing here and like the joys of farming. I really wanted to present farming in the context of Farm Arts Collective in an artistic way. So the response has been people really liking the theater experience because it's usually very fun and very innovative. Like I said, you know, all these people making a play together, it's very surprising like what we come up with. The stories are unique and curious. I mean, the shows sell out.
The shows sell out every year. And we're finding that, I say this often, but we're finding that people that would come to a theater performance and not necessarily come to a farm are still coming and vice versa. It's sure. Just a really great cross-pollination. And we're finding that it is opening and broadening our audience and our community.
Let's talk a little bit about the creative placemaking that. Tell us how that fits into the workshops and the performances that you produce over at the farm.
Okay. The best example of the creative placemaking that is Dream on the Farm and Farm Arts Collective is that we are creating work with the people who live in this community in Pennsylvania, in New York. We are enlivening a local agricultural space that is now multi-use, where people can see where their food comes from. Where they're getting their food is also a place they can come and learn about something. They can see a cool show. They can propose a show mm-hmm. to us. They can say, can I do my jazz? Mm-hmm. Can I bring my show about autism? It's their space mm-hmm. too. So it's a collective and mm-hmm. we are enlivening and we are celebrating this place, this land, this community's history of farming, this community's history of activism and music and river life. And everything we're doing is about that. So it's connecting to place. We are stewarding our land, being organic farmers, and we're also stewarding our community and treating it with respect and nurturing it and cultivating it so that it can keep growing. And that's what I think of when I think of creative placemaking, and that's what I want to do.
You know, it's a really great open door policy at Farm Arts Collective. We have open workshops from January, February, March, but it's really throughout the entire year. If someone approaches Tanis and says, hey, I want to, you know, be a part of this, or I want to bring something, we always try to find a way to make that happen for these people, to make them heard and to have a place in our community.
That's great. So let's go now into a little bit more about the shows themselves. You're doing Jazz a Show.
Lucy Joseph. Yes.
Tell me a little bit about
that. Sure. So Lucy Joseph is a real person, a historical figure that lived in the 1800s and actually strolled the very streets of Honesdale right outside of the studio. Fascinating person. Mimi McGurl, who is the director and also the writer of this piece, wrote this original piece with help from Bill Klaber's book, The Rebellion of Miss Lucy Ann Lobdell. And we tell the story of her life. And
well, let's hear a little bit about that, because she was a very unique person in her time,
yes.
right? Way ahead of her time.
Way ahead of her time, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. So Lucy Joseph was born Lucy Ann, and she discovered that when she got a little bit older that she needed to find work. And work back then for women were either school teachers or homemakers. So she decided to, the way to get work was to disguise herself as a man. And that's what she did. She disguised herself as a man and she went out and got these jobs. And she was also penned as the female huntress of Long Eddie. She had a great shot. She was really skilled in all of those homesteading. And she ended up falling in love with a woman, which was one of the first times that was ever documented, something that wasn't talked about.
Right.
And she was essentially put away in an insane asylum for dressing as a man and for refusing to put on a dress and refusing not to dress as a woman. And she lived her life out in an insane asylum for 30 years.
Also in June, of course, we have the Juneteenth celebration. Let's talk a little bit about that, how you've integrated this important event in our nation's history onto your farm and into your production company.
Absolutely. Well, I have been collaborating with Janice Adams for a while now. And, you know, Janice is on WJFF. She has the Janice Adams Show, and she's an African-American historian and a journalist. And then we have Oliver King, who will be doing a piece about Langston Hughes. And then we have our friend Gray Wolf, who's a Lenape member of the Nation in New Jersey. He's going to be giving a land acknowledgement and talking about the history of the land and doing an opening prayer. And so it'll be a really great night, and we'll have some food, as we always do.
From the Will Wiss Farm.
Yes,
of course. Yep.
Of course.
Farm fresh.
Yes. Farm fresh food at almost every event, actually. Yep. We always make some kind of offering, you know, just for people to stay and talk.
Great. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Give us the date of that.
Juneteenth. That's June 19th. Yeah.
June 19th.
At 7
Thursday.
O'clock.
7 p.m. Mm-hmm. on the farm.
Yes.
Anything you would like to add about your season, about upcoming things that are happening on your farm?
So on May 24th, we have a visiting company from New Orleans. It's a company called Art Spot Productions, and Kathy Randles is the lead artist in this performance. And she's created a play that brings together her upbringing with two Baptist ministers as parents and her 25 years working at the Louisiana Correctional Facility. Yeah. And she's part of this performance because it's about the prison system. And her name is Mama Glow Williams. So Mama Glow is going to be at our theater as part of this presentation about incarceration and forgiveness. And I mean, it's going to be a fascinating evening.
Okay.
24th at 7 o'clock.
And we're going to go to what website for that?
FarmArtsCollective.org.
Beautiful. There's also a lot of other things happening on your farm. Mm-hmm. We have Family Farm Day, farm tour with lunch. We have flower cut and design. This is all coming up in the next several months. All these fun things that are happening right here in our neighborhood, folks, at the Willow Wisp Farm. I want to thank Tanis Kowalczuk and Jess Beveridge for sharing their insight, their passion, and truly inspiring work over at the Farm Arts Collective. Thank you, ladies, for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Tom.
And that was the segment from an episode of Curtain Call, Farm Arts Collective. I think I recorded that with the ladies back in May. Now, to close out this very special holiday episode of Curtain Call, I want to end with a voice that has literally spent a lifetime championing the arts right here in our community.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll find out who that is. It's the best of Curtain Call on Radio Chatskill.
This is Radio Catskill. A cold weather advisory goes into effect for Wayne and Pike counties from 7 tonight until 10 tomorrow morning, and it is very cold throughout our listening area. Temperatures will not rise above the teens this week. Flurries today, it's windy, and lots of dry snow fell yesterday, so expect blowing and drifting throughout the afternoon and into the night, possibly impacting the morning commute again tomorrow morning. High of 18 today, overnight low down to 7. This is Radio Catskill.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, FDA Commissioner Marty McCary.
The FDA regulates 20% of the U.S. economy, and there are so many things broken at the FDA.
And how does McCary plan to fix what's broken?
We're going to find out what sounds promising and bring that to the forefront.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio. Tuesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
So here's the deal. Public radio is now operating without federal funding, and your support matters more than ever. One way to help is to donate that car, truck, or old motorcycle in your driveway. You clear out some space and help keep trusted news coverage alive in your community. The process? Simple, free, even tax deductible. Just head to this station's website and help us keep this work going together.
Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Today, we're celebrating the voices that bring our stages to life on a special Best of Curtain Call, our theater podcast. Each week, Host Tom Candela brings you engaging, in-depth interviews with the artists, directors, and creators shaping our local community theaters, alongside special guests from New York City and beyond. From hometown stages to Broadway lights, Tom uncovers the stories, struggles, and triumphs behind the curtain. Let's get back to more of The Best of Curtain Call, our theater podcast. Once again, here's host Tom Candela.
Jonathan Charles Fox is a storyteller, a performer, a documentarian, a photojournalist, and a tireless advocate for local theater and community-based art, all art. He has helped preserve the creative stories that might otherwise fade away, whether it be dance or poetry or just an art exhibit. He's there. You can always find him with his beautiful little dog Gidget at his side. He's a natural choice to close out this special holiday episode of Curtain Call because his work brings our community full circle, honoring the artists, the stories, and the people who make our region's theater scene what it is. Here's Jonathan Charles Fox. This week on Curtain Call, we are joined by a true creative force whose career has spanned the bright lights of Hollywood, the intimacy of the stage, and the heart of the Catskills. Jonathan Charles Fox has done it all. He's an actor, journalist, photographer, radio personality, and a beloved advocate for the arts and culture of Sullivan County. So we're thrilled to welcome Jonathan on Curtain Call. So what drew you to the world of acting to begin with?
You know, my grandfather, I think, is responsible for sparking my interest in the arts in general. He got me involved as a kid, a child, in the Triple Cities Opera Company in Binghamton, New York, because they were looking for townsfolk for La Boheme.
Okay.
And that included little kids running across the streets of Paris. And I did it. And it snowed on stage. And there were costumes and lights and audiences and people cheering. And that light bulb went on.
I bet. It sparked a love of theater right then and there.
Absolutely. Huh? I said, this is what I want to do.
So from that early age, so that planted the seed.
It did.
Where did it go from there?
Any opportunity I had to get on a stage from that moment on, I took, whether it be at a school play in elementary school. And it just went from there to junior high and high school drama clubs.
Sure.
And I did summer theater. And I got into an out-of-town workshop production of a show called I'll Die If I Can't Live Forever. Was it that? No, it was The First Day of Us. Pre-Broadway, I was 16 years old, and I was cast in what turned out to be a Broadway show.
So what was next after that?
I wound up getting a job at the National Shakespeare Company in New York. And so I did shows from Ibsen to Shaw to Brecht. And thought quite a bit of myself, getting reviews in the New York Times. I was a working actor. I did the musical version of a lot of things because I looked so young.
So how did you make that transition? You went from the stage and theater in New York City.
I did.
Now we're out to Hollywood. How'd you get out there, and what was the first thing you did out there?
Well, it wasn't planned at all on my part, and it wasn't part of my dream. I wanted to be a stage actor. That was my goal. I did a production of The Taming of the Shrew, and it was 1978. And I played Tranio.
Okay.
I won an award for the Golden Hanger. Most costume changes in a production in any particular
year.
I had 27 costume changes.
Wow.
There was a crew in town in New York looking for locations and characters to do a television version of the film Fame. I tested for that and they hired me then and there. I went to work 3 days later. I was 21. Yeah. I had been hired to play 15. I was hired to play one of Shirovsky's music students who played the oboe.
Right. And did you play the oboe?
I did not.
Okay.
But I got paid extra money because I didn't.
All right. So you went on from there. Then eventually you got a Better Off Dead and Racing with the Moon. Tell us a little bit about that and your experiences.
Better Off Dead. The film was interesting about a cartoonist, a young cartoonist with a vivid imagination and his cartoons come to life. Racing with the Moon is a wonderful film. I got hired by Richard Benjamin, who I admired so much, who directed the film.
Yeah.
And it was about high school students getting ready to go off to war. So that high school also had a nerd, and they hired me to play him. And my role was sizable.
Yeah.
I wound up doing about 3.5 weeks in Mendocino with Sean Penn and Nicolas Cage. And Elizabeth McGovern was brought in right at the 11th hour. And day by day, that story about boys going off to war, including the nerd, turned into a story about Sean Penn's character and Elizabeth McGovern's character falling in love with each other.
Wow.
So my page is cut.
Oh,
and the story changed. So I filmed a lot, but when it came time for the premiere, Richard Benjamin called me at home and he said, I'm really sorry. And he said, I don't want you to get there and find out you're gone. You're just gone.
Really?
Yeah.
They didn't leave a single scene?
No. I'm in the movie here and there. I pop up here and there.
Okay.
But that's when I was dubbed the king of the cutting room floor. That became the story of my career. Racing with the Moon is a good film, but it killed something in me.
I did. Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because at that point, was there a decision made that I've had enough of this California
That's
stuff?
That's exactly right. I called home every night to answer your question, crying.
Oh.
And saying, I'm hating every minute of this. I was playing the nerd for the 10,000th time.
Did you come back to New York to the stage, or did you now morph into your photography career?
I morphed into my writing career. I started writing, in my humble opinion, back in California.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been writing it for 25 years. I said all I can do is write about the world of arts and entertainment, and that's what I started doing, and here we are.
All right. You've had such a varied career. It's like one artistic thing to the next.
I keep reinventing myself. And photography and writing certainly go hand in hand. It's called photojournalism.
Sure.
And it was not something I ever had any interest in doing whatsoever. But when I came to the Catskills and went to work for a newspaper, I said, I need a photographer. And everybody looked at me and just laughed at the editorial meeting and said, need a photographer? They said, you got to take pictures. I said, I'm not a photographer. I'm a writer. So I went and took pictures with God knows what. And every week I'd come in and we'd go back to a new editorial meeting would come up and they say, you know, Jonathan, your copy is fine. The words are fine. We like the column just fine. The pictures, not so much. One day I was out walking a different dog, three dogs ago this was, and I saw a baby skunk and I had my camera with me and I took a picture of the skunk and then another picture of the skunk and another picture of the skunk and I put them on my computer at home that night and said, oh my God, photography.
Those are good.
Photography. And I fell in love hard with photography and really delved into it. And here we are. I am happy enough to say I'm an award-winning photographer. I've had a couple of photographic exhibitions, and this pleases me very much. I find the photographic process itself to be extremely artistic and creatively fulfilling.
That's great. So I'd be remiss if I didn't mention now your community service, because in addition to all these great things you've done, you also named the Paul Harris Fellow back in 2020.
The Paul Harris Fellow is a recognition that is bestowed upon individuals who are not Rotarians, to the best of my knowledge, but it is people who are recognized for their work in the community.
Yes.
And it's kind of a big deal. Mother Teresa is a Paul Harris Fellow. Boris Yeltsin is a Paul Harris Fellow. Jimmy Carter, Paul Harris Fellow. And Jonathan Charles Fox.
Amazing.
And here we are.
Amazing.
It was an honor, and it is an honor, and I still don't know why I got it.
Well, well deserved, in my opinion.
Appreciate that.
Well, having done all these wonderful things that you've done, what advice would you give to someone coming up looking to live a creative and multifaceted life like you have?
Yeah. I would say some very trite things. And I said so to my goddaughter when she was coming up in the world, and she showed an interest in this, that, or the other thing. Yeah, money is a good thing to have. It's not about money. And what I would say to Corey, my goddaughter, is follow your bliss. Because in my humble opinion, a life without creativity is not a life worth living. It's about the creativity. It's about the creative process. For me, I'm not an accountant. So what drives me is the other side of the brain. And for me, and it has always been thus, unless there's creativity involved in some form of my life, I can't be happy. The theater is everything to me. Theater is in my blood. It will always be in my blood. And whether I like something or hate something makes no never mind. What I want people here to do and why I do what I do is to get them out and go see it and experience it and support it. That's my job. You go, you support, you sit, you experience the magic of theater If somebody does that because they read that in the paper that week, right, then I've done my job.
Very good. Jonathan, I want to thank you so much for being on this episode of Curtain Call.
Thank you.
You are a big part of this theater community, and you keep it alive.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
And that was my conversation with the incomparable and beloved Jonathan Charles Fox. And Gidget was in the studio with him that day as well. So as I come to the close now of this very special holiday best of edition of Curtain Call, I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you to every guest who has shared their stories, their work, and their heart with me. I want to let you know that your voices and your courage and your creativity are what keep this show alive and keep our theater community thriving. Thank you as well to you, our listeners, for welcoming these conversations into your homes and your cars, into your smartphones. I want to let you know that you are a vital part of this creative circle of Curtain Call and of certainly our theater community. I'm deeply grateful for the way you continue to show up for the arts in our region. I also want to remind you that you can listen to all the episodes of Curtain Call by going to wjffradio.org, and clicking on the shows tab, and then you'll see podcasts. You click on that, and you'll be able to find the Curtain Call podcast right there, and you can listen to the full episodes, including the four episodes, the excerpts of the four episodes you just heard. There's a lot more to them. Each one was at least 40 minutes long, so you'll get a lot more information about those, as well as all the other guests that I've had on the show. So, having said all that, I'm going to leave you with a song that feels like a toast to friendship and resilience and the promise of the days ahead, this being the new year, 2nd of January of 2026. It's a celebration of choosing joy, even when the road hasn't always been easy. Here is The Best of Times from the original Broadway cast of La Cage aux Folles, performed by George Hearn, Elizabeth Parrish, and the original Broadway cast ensemble. On behalf of everyone here at WJFF Radio Catskill and me at Curtain Call, I wish you peace, gratitude, and a new year filled with hope, laughter, and prosperity. Thank you for listening, and the music starts right now.
What's left of summer but a faded rose? The best of times is now. As for tomorrow, well, who knows? Who knows? Who knows? So hold this moment fast and live and love as hard as you know how, and make this moment last, because the best of times is now, is now, is now, now. But some forgotten yesterday, live and love as hard as you know how, and make this moment last, because the best of times is now, is now, is now.
Tomorrow, well, who knows?
Remember, you can listen to Curtain Call, our theater podcast, anytime at wjffradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
This is Radio Catskill. The winter storm has moved on, and our region is dealing with its impacts today. Ulster County has a travel ban in place until noon. Other municipalities are asking residents to stay off the roads, including the towns of Delaware and Thompson. There are many, many closures today. Sullivan County government offices open at 11. Exercise caution and check ahead. Call 511 for the latest emergency info and road conditions in your state. This is Radio Catskill.
I'm Donna Fellenberg, host of Catskill Character. Join us Saturdays at 10:30 for stories from fascinating characters of the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania, right here on Radio Catskill.
There are many, many people who will test your patience every single day.
Your spouse, your children, your coworkers. The person in front of you in line who can't seem to find the coins to make change.
How to find patience this week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Architect Frank Gehry died last month. His unique style found curvaceous beauty, blending organic form with modern materials.
We thought we'd invented modern architecture, but then this genius came along. Ooh, different.
Different and exceedingly rare. Why aren't there more North American architects capable of adding that kind of magic to the built environments we all live in? That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill. WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.